Amy. So this is the Monday, April 11 meeting of the Yolo County Transportation District Board of Directors pursuant to Government Code Section 54953 E1. We're meeting via teleconference. That statute and the executive order that accompanied it authorizes us to do this. I think this may be our last meeting in this fashion, doing it in this fashion. Of course, that's all contingent upon changes that may or may not happen in the trajectory of the COVID pandemic. But at this point, it looks like we're emerging to our May meeting in person. There is opportunity for people to comment during this meeting, and I'll let Mimi describe that and then determination of a quorum and call the roll. So okay. Mimi, would you like to do that, please?
Yes. Yolo County?
Here.
City of Davis is absent. City of West Sacramento?
Here.
City of Winters?
Here.
City of Woodland?
Here.
And then UC Davis?
Here.
And Caltrans?
Here.
Wonderful. So we do have a quorum?
Yes, we did.
And that brings us to item two, which is public comments on matters regarding matters on the consent agenda, which includes our approval of the agenda itself, as well as items that are not on the agenda but within the purview of this agency. And note that the board is prohibited from discussing items not on the agenda by law, and just because it would be unfair to others who might want to be involved in those conversations. So with that, are there any people who are attending now who would like to, who've indicated they want to address us? Mimi, do you see any raised hands or any other?
I do not see any public comments.
Okay. Do we have any written comments that have been submitted to us?
We do not.
All right. Very good. So that brings us to the consent calendar. It's items 3A through F. Autumn, is there anything you want to remove from the consent calendar?
No, Mr. Chair.
Is there any member of the board who would like to remove anything from the consent calendar? And if not, is there a motion to approve it?
Lauren will move the consent calendar as written.
Stallard, one second.
Okay, I think Stallard was first up. So motion by Lauren and second by Stallard. Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Yolo County?
Aye.
City of Davis is absent. City of West Sacramento?
Yes.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passed.
Very good. Thank you. That brings us to item 4, administrative reports. Autumn, I think this is yours.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the recently reformatted agenda item where we cover a variety of different reports. So we'll start with reports from board members. If any of the board members would like to offer any reports on any items that are matters that are related to YCDD's mission or purview, this is the time to share those.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair.
Yes, Tom.
I'd just like to mention that, you know, one of the exciting things I think of for our future is becoming more of a full range transportation agency. And, I participated in the development of this agenda, and I think it's almost totally bus related. And I think in the future, we should try to work to get more things on our agenda to show that we are a well-rounded agency in transportation. And possibly that makes me think too, we talked previously about renaming ourselves. And, you know, I think Jesse mentioned that she loved YOLO Go. I like that too. But I think we need to help our public understand that we're here for all transportation. As just another example, May is Bike Month, you know, and we really don't have anybody championing that in YOLO County currently. But I think it'd be something if our agency isn't prepared to take on this year that we should be come the champions of bicycling countywide as part of our mission. So that was just an observation I wanted to share with my fellow board members. Thank you.
Thanks. Very interesting and on point. Thank you, Tom. Any other board reports? Autumn heard the comment. I'm sure we'll be considering how to bring those items forward. All right, so no further board member reports. There is this next item is ad hoc committee on AD managed lane report. There's a board report. Is there anything to report out, Autumn, on that topic?
Yeah, I believe Director Dulcich is going to give that report.
Very good.
That's great. And I can definitely jump in. We have, as the ad hoc committee, had two really productive meetings recently with Caltrans. The first was to preview the idea of an MOU. The managed lanes project is so complex and has so many upcoming decision points that we really feel like pursuing that memorandum of understanding between YCTD and Caltrans.
We lost you there.
Step.
There you go.
If I'm still.
I can hear you, Matt.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, so pursuing that MOU, and we've had an opportunity with Caltrans to discuss the concept, to discuss some of the items that will be covered in the MOU, and an upcoming step is to share with Caltrans a draft of that MOU. So that was one of the items that happened in a prior meeting with Caltrans. And in our second meeting with Caltrans, we had a great opportunity to discuss with them the approach for the environmental review for the CEQA EIR and really trying to work on some of the ideas of integrating the sustainability features of the project, the equity features of the project, and wrapping those ideas into the overall strategy and public review period for that draft environmental impact report. So we made some progress, but I think we still want to work with Caltrans on those two particular points and pushing those into the environmental impact report. And I'm sure in our next meeting, we'll have another update for the full board on our progress for both the MOU and for the environmental review. So that's the short summary, but we could definitely answer any questions that anyone might have.
Very good. Very thorough report. Thank you, Matt. Are there any questions from board members? Okay, very good. So we can move on to the TransDev report. And moving on doesn't mean that we're not paying attention to this topic, and it is such a significant challenge and opportunity for our region to address. So it's wonderful work that we have the opportunity to pursue. Okay, TransDev.
Yes, good evening. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Actually, we're still going very positive. We are showing about a 35.8% increase in quarter one for 2022 versus 2021. So that's a pretty nice increase. I would say that for the first time since I've come in October of 20, we actually have the number of operators per bids that are currently out. We're going forward on getting the numbers we needed for the expansions and all the other services to be coming back. It's all in projection right now. We have 10 trainees that are either behind the wheel or their last week of class. So it's going really well.
Excellent. Any questions for TransDev?
Good news.
Yes.
Thank you, Michael. Good work.
Thank you.
And that brings us back to Autumn's executive director report.
Great. Thanks so much, Mr. Chair. So as you all know, last week we were sad to say goodbye to Jose Perez, who's been our deputy director for many years. For I think about 5 years he was with YCTV. We're very sad to lose him and excited for him as he transitions to a new opportunity in his hometown of San Diego as the general manager at Triton Transit, which is the UC San Diego bus operator. We are making plans and discussions about how to replace Jose. We'll be bringing a revised and updated job description to the board for approval next month. We'll be working very quickly to fill, of course, that very important role and thinking about the ways in which we may want to, again, every crisis is an opportunity. So thinking about how we may want to do some restructuring around emphasizing different aspects of that role, looking at where Jose and I had complementary strengths and thinking about how we can have a new person in that role who as much as possible complements the other members of the team. So stay tuned for more details on that next month. The Director Stollard's comment, I did want to make a note that May is indeed bike month, and YOLO Commute, our TMA, which is staffed by YCGG staff, is actively working as part of the regional May's bike month effort. So we'll be, we are putting together promotional materials in concert with our partners at the region. And so more information on that will be coming in our newsletter this month and how folks can engage. And on that note, I wanted to share that thanks to, Brian Abinat, our new senior planner, we inherited a small fleet of bikes from the Cannery Project in Davis that are now YCTD staff bikes that live at the office and that we can use to do errands around the city of Woodland. So we're very excited about that and the fact that they were free. And Brian fixed up all the flat tires and they're now parked in our office. So we're looking forward to having a bit more of engagement of our own, if own YCTD staff for May's Bike Month. Speaking of Brian, he is getting started on the inner city bike project, which we are now calling the YOLO Active Transportation Corridors, or YATSE project. Currently we're in the phase of interviewing our agency partners, and also convening a couple of stakeholder focus groups to really get input on the project approach. And in order to really inform the scope of work before we take that out to bid for a consultant who will lead up those efforts. So we've had some great conversations already with City of Woodland, West Sacramento, and Yolo County staff, and we're looking forward to those stakeholder focus groups coming up in the next few weeks. And so Brian is planning to bring, we're going to bring a report to you all once we've concluded those efforts to talk through the kind of proposed scope of work and approach to that project. And then the next step will again be going out to procure a consultant. So more substantive update on that coming soon. I also wanted to share that the finance team has been hard at work. We have our new payroll system. We're working on getting that ready, hopefully to launch in May. And our new accounting system is we're getting ready to launch July 1 concurrent with the new fiscal year. So excited to see those important transitions moving forward. We also have had a meeting of our technical advisory committee just last week. It's first meeting of the year where they talked about the upcoming budget, and you'll be hearing more about that from Leo and I when we talk to you about the budget coming up. But a good meeting, and the TAC is going to be meeting quarterly for the rest of this year is the current plan. So we're finalizing their meeting schedule for the remainder of this year. And that's my report. Happy to answer any questions on anything I didn't cover.
Good. Thank you very much. And I think the board is all wants to congratulate Jose Perez on his new role and thank him for his service here. So perhaps we can send him a written thanks since he's not able to be with us this evening. And a very, very, very good fellow to have been with us for all these years.
It would be great to send him flowers, not to interrupt you, Chair. It would be great to send him flowers. I mean, he's just such a wonderful person, and he was somebody that I worked so closely with when it was my term as chair. And for him to go from his position to acting chair and back, you know, he was just delightful. And I would just love to send him that message.
Very good. I support that. Very nice. Nice idea. So other questions of Autumn on her presentation from any member of the board? Very good. So this concludes our reports. I recognize that there may be someone in public who would like to address us on the topics that we just touched on. Is there any public comment on the administrative report item before we move to item 5?
There are no public comments.
Very good. Thank you. So that brings us to item 5. And this is a board chair rotation. Mr. Stallard, would you like to address this?
I was going to offer to speak to that, if I may. And I'd like to speak specifically to my colleagues. This is the only organization that I have any association with that changes its officers mid-year. And I don't think that's probably the best policy. I think our councils tend to reorganize at the end of the year and appoint to these boards. And it sort of complicated if it's in the middle of an officer rotation. So I think it would be wiser for us to go to an annual, a calendar year, style. And, if that was comfortable to my colleagues, I would propose that Chair Saylor continue throughout the remainder of 2022 and that the rotation then commence in January 1 with the new chair. That's my thought. I've consulted with staff. There's no known problems that prevent us from doing this. So it's strictly our call. So that's my point of view. I'd be happy to hear what my colleagues think. Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Tom. Any comments from anyone on the board?
I'll just make a couple of comments. I'm trying to recall who served the longest here. Don, have you? Did we switch it? Was it annual? Before, and did we switch it? I'm trying to recall.
I think I am the longest serving member at this point. Yeah. Lucas might have preceded.
Yeah, I think Lucas and I came around, and then you and I came around the same time, I want to say. But I'm trying to recall if there's a reason why it switches at this point.
I don't think there is. Maybe we tried to tie it to the fiscal year or something, but
yeah, I think that's in essence what it was, but I don't have an issue at all with, sort of the rationale, of it, because this, again, it kind of ties in with the way most of our, councils and whatever you serve on, but Don, what is that? The board serve whatever. I think it's annual in there too, right?
I
see the logic in it. I just want to make sure that, I know we're missing a board member tonight from Davis, and want to make sure that, there's no other issue from them, but, I'm not sure if Lucas is planning to show up later tonight or.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well. Okay.
All right. Jesse.
City of Winters, changed its, elections. So now we're in with the big election, not the primary. So it makes sense for that election sequence to have it the annual.
Yeah.
We were, you know, our election was in March, so we would be seating that person in the middle of the year when this change would happen. So it makes more sense to have it become annual. And I thought it's very thoughtful of Director Stoller to bring it up.
Thank you, Jesse. If that's the case, is a motion in order, Mr. Chair?
It can be. I think Chris's comments.
I was just checking to see if Lucas was going to show and make sure he had the city of Davis had a say in it. But if he's not going to be here, I just said postpone it. If he was going to be here, I'd say postpone it until when he shows up. But
no, he's not coming tonight. He's got another commitment. Okay. Tom has made a motion. Is there a second?
Lauren will second.
All right. Is there any, and let's, any further comments? And let's go ahead and count the roll.
Yolo County?
Yes.
City of Davis? Absent. City of West Sacramento?
Yes.
City of Winters?
Aye.
And City of Woodland?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes.
Thanks for your thoughtful attention to that topic, Tom. And brings us to.
You also got a month or two late starting your own term, Don, as I recall.
Never, I can't remember.
We were talking the executive director issues, remember.
Oh.
But most people would be looking to end their term early, but Don wants to extend. Hey.
Live to serve, Chris.
Yeah. Something like that.
move to item 6, the budget development.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and start, and this is going to be a tag team with Leo and myself. I want to mention, by the way, I want to congratulate Leo and welcome him on board. One of the items on the consent calendar was to bring him on as our interim CFO for 2 years, so he'll be transitioning out of his role as consultant and into that role. So congratulations and welcome, Leo. Happy to have you on the team. So happy, I can't even tell you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, and I'm really glad to be changing my role and being more formally part of the team.
So I'll start this item and then Leo will take over. So as you know, it's budget season. And so we wanted to first share with you the timeline and where we are in the budget process, and then talk about our service plan for next year, and then talk about the operating expenses and administrative expenses associated with that service plan. This is really a kind of a building block towards our full budget. That's obviously a very important piece. So our first step, we shared a working draft with the Technical Advisory Committee on April 1st, and then had that meeting with them on April 4th. It was a good meeting. It was mostly, I would say we didn't receive a ton of comments. It was mostly questions, and we were able to just kind of inform them about kind of the work that had been done so far. And it was actually very helpful for me to understand and hear from them about, you know, questions about, was it done this way, how it was done in the past. So it's been a really useful, I think, educational process for me as well as Leo, I think, to understand the different kind of conversations and ways in which our local member agencies have worked collaboratively with YCTD on the budget in the past. Our next step is to have a full draft that will circulate to the Technical Advisory Committee. And that statutorily, it just needs to be 15 days before the board takes action. But obviously, we want to have as much input as from them as possible. So our goal is to get that out the door by April 30th, if not sooner. And then at the May board meeting of the YCTD board, you'll have a full draft for review, and we'll be looking for your input and feedback then, and then with the goal of having the board approve the final budget in June. So that's the timeline and where we are in that process. Let's go ahead to the next slide. So in terms of the planned service levels, again, this is really kind of foundational, and this is clearly the biggest part of our budget. So I wanted to just highlight where we're planning to change service relative to what it is currently. So this just summarizes those. So the Route 42 A and B, the planned expansion to 30-minute service levels at peak periods, this was, of course, meant to take place last fall and didn't. So, you know, you heard TransDev's report. We're hopeful that we will be able to launch that, and we've budgeted for it starting as soon as July 1, because at that point we will be finishing up our service assistance with Unitrans and believe we should have the drivers to implement that as soon as July 1. Then we're also looking at resuming weekday evening service in West Sacramento on the routes 40 and 41. So this is really just adding back one trip at the end of the day in the evening service. Currently that service terminates around 5:30, but we know that, or we believe that there is demand to resume that service a bit later. And then the routes 43, 44, 230, and 45, these are our express services that were suspended due to the driver shortage. We've brought back one trip each as of April 1, and we're planning to bring it to about three trips each, so about two-thirds of our pre-suspension service level. So that's our plan is, you know, again, pending driver availability to have about three express trips per route per day each direction. And then, of course, Woodland Microtransit, we're assuming that launches in January 2023, replacing the current local routes, the 211 and 212. We'll keep running the 211 and 212 with no changes to the current service levels until then. And then we're assuming no further Unitrans assistance after July 1. So all the rest of our service will remain the same. These are the only changes that we are proposing for the next fiscal year. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Leo to talk through the operating expenses.
You're on mute, Leo.
There you go. That's the the mantra of the Zoom age. So thank you. Yes, I'm now unmuted. This is still very much a work in progress. This reflects what we shared with the Technical Advisory Committee, and we're going to continue working on this, taking your comments and also getting updated information to inform the budget for the next version that you'll see in May. But what we're showing here is on a preliminary basis, we're showing our administrative budget down at about $4 million, which is just down about $200,000 from the way it was displayed for the current year budget. A large part of that change is just that the current year budget included, for technical reasons, some of the engine overhaul budget was included in the administrative budget, the part that wasn't funded by State of Good Repair. And we're taking that out, and all of the maintenance is going in the appropriate operational budgets, is what we plan for next year. So within the fixed route and paratransit and microtransit. And so that makes the budget appear to go down, but that's really just a shifting of maintenance costs. The labor budget is about $2.15 million that we're looking up now, up about $170,000 or 8% from the prior year. It includes a 4% COLA, or the assumptions include a 4% COLA, which is what's provided for according to the formula in the personnel policy that was just approved in December of 2021. It's based on the cost of living increase published for California. It's a really a lagging indicator. It's based on April 2020 to April 2021. And so if this is done year over year, the idea is that at least over time, the salaries keep up with inflation, but only on a lagging basis. And this also includes the best benefit, estimate of benefit costs that we can make at this point. We don't know how the health costs will change in January, but it includes an estimate for some increase in there. And these assumptions are still being refined, and they'll be updated at the May meeting. The fixed route budget is shown at $10.3 million, up about $650,000. And the contracted transportation, which, of course, is the largest part of that budget, reflects a $200,000 increase from 21-22. It reflects the driver wage increase and the annual escalator in the contract. The million-dollar fuel budget is actually a little lower than last year just because of the contingencies that were built in last year. This does assume the current rate of cost, and it allows for price escalation. We really don't know what the full next year will bring, but this allows some room for price escalation. And there's a new thing in the fixed route budget, which we may actually change the way we display this in the next iteration. But we wanted to show the professional services needs for the essential planning efforts that I think you've heard before are really needed, have to take place over the next year. And these include for the short-range transit plan, the 10-year capital improvement plan, and the zero-emission fleet transition plan. We don't have a specific contract yet for these services or a specific price. Much of this is a sizable share, about 80% of the cost, I believe, is supportable with federal funds. And I think in the next iteration of the budget, we may actually show this as part of not a combined project budget, capital/project budget, rather than showing it as part of the operational budget. But still, we want to reflect this need in the next year. So the next slide, please. Yeah, paratransit is fairly flat, down just $160,000 from the current year budget. One thing to point out is that in the current year budget, the paratransit and microtransit were displayed together as the demand responsive budget. At different times, we need to show these differently to the state and the feds in our different reports. Both paratransit and microtransit are demand responsive, but they have different clientele, of course. So sometimes microtransit, which is available to the general population, may be combined with our fixed route to reflect all of our general services versus the paratransit specialized services. So to assist whenever we have to show our budget in different ways, we thought it was important to actually break these out into separate sort of programmatic categories. So the paratransit is really based on current spending rates with modest cost escalators. The microtransit budget assumes the start of the Woodland effort in January and is as shown here. Similar to the assumptions that we had last year. There's a new budget that's shown here, reflects the previous comments about being more than just a public transit district, is the multimodal budget. And this shows in the current iteration, this is still very much under development, but it shows 1.6 million of projects that are being considered in this area. Including the sizable $850,000 project funded with the RAISE grant. This also, we may change the display in the next version of the budget so that it's not really exactly part of the operating budget. I think it may more clearly be reflected in a capital/multi-year budget so that if you approve the funds for this, they may actually be spent over more than the course of just the next 12 months. And we'd like to reflect that by showing it separately. So The next steps, the April 30th full draft budget will include some updated expenditure assumptions. We have new figures about insurance costs for next year and other assumptions that we're continuing to update. We'll include much more information on the revenue sources as to how exactly the funding for this budget is split between the federal, the state STA and LTF funds and other funding sources. And we will also be displaying the capital and multi-year budget. We should be ready to start to have that together very soon, and our intent is for April 30th. And happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Chair, just one quick, I wanted to note just one correction on page 32 of your packet, attachment one, that provides some detail on the service levels. We've realized that there's an error. One of the formulas does not populating correctly. So the proposed hours and miles for 2023, we believe those are incorrect. We caught that unfortunately after the packet had gone out. So I just wanted to note that those, the numbers in that table are incorrect.
Well, very good. I really appreciate, and I think the board, if we think back about earlier years when we've had our budget process, we didn't have these building blocks so clearly and set out for us as a part of the iterative building of the budget. And so this is I really appreciate this. And I also appreciate that you had the opportunity to talk with the technical advisory committee in advance of our conversation here. So you've got their insight and their beginning of consideration of the implications for the member jurisdictions as well. And I think the idea of building the service models and then using that to drive the budget development, very strong package. With that, our board members, are there questions that you'd like to ask, and I'll ask if there are public comments after clarifying questions. Any questions that you need to get a response to at this point?
I think if I may, Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and go.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. I agree, Don. I think that I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I agree with leading starting the conversation by articulating on the expense side, at least, the kind of building blocks of service that you're assuming going into this. And I'll start with sort of the progress of this, in the process, question, which is, I'll agree with the chair around, building out this budget to include the technical advisory committee. I think starting that way is a real, for me, is real progress. Ensuring that the member jurisdictions have full transparency with them around what to expect by way of service levels in their city and how that correlates to their contributions to the yellow bus and to the services we provide. So I just want to say and encourage and over communicate, over share if that's possible. Some of this, I think, nobody likes surprises, and frankly, this board has had to deal with surprises in the past, as I think the chair and other members that have been here in the past kind of understood. And especially in while we're still going through a kind of post-COVID, or you ever get ready to come back to meetings, but we're still dealing with uneven and inconsistent, unsure. Return to work around the region, and we still aren't sure about these routes being at what capacity will look like for us. So it will be important for us to understand each component of our services we're providing and where they are. And I think it's smart for us to kind of break those out and see sort of from an expense standpoint what those mean. I think you answered my question on the first in your statement, Ms. Levinson, around the I'm kind of wondering where the revenue side comes in, and having a budget where you only see the expense side tells us half the story, and then being able to understand where the revenue kicks in to support these is going to be really important. So I know you're still working through that, and I just want to flag it as something because I think that's where for us and the member jurisdictions and our frankly, our home agencies will be asking, what's the ask? Is there an ask? And so that will be an important part, and how the monies we're all paying into a service, and to Mr. Stella's point, into a much more higher functioning, or at least we hope it to be a higher functioning district with lots of services. And I think everyone's going to want to understand that, to see those services, how they're built out, how they're budgeted on the expense side is smart, and then how much their contributions will be part of that, as well as grant funding, whatever else. I also want to flag to a degree for and I talked to Autumn about this a bit on Friday, and remind the board that in the past, couple of years, we've seen some extraordinary budgeting issues come our way. First of all, even prior to pandemic, we were dealing with budgeting issues having to do with decline in ridership. And then certainly COVID brought in a change, a precipitous drop in funding and ridership. And we agreed upon a budget that was predicated, and maybe Mr. Levinson or Autumn have a statement about it, but we agreed to use some of the CARES Act money that was provided for this agency. And I think the prior executive director sort of budgeted that for a longer term range to last us about 3 years to sort of fill the gaps, the operational gaps, to subsidize the district for 3 years. And I believe this will basically complete year, the first full year, I think it is, maybe a year and a half of the funding that is provided. And so while we're building out this budget, it will be important. I think one of the goals we had out there was to have a sort of a 3 to 5 year budget view projection of what it looks like. So I don't want to lose that thought, because I think again, believing in a budget that's no surprises, that there's full transparency to see how much of the revenue is coming in is exhausting the funding we got from the federal government, where that's being supplemented, where that's supplementing, and making sure there's policy decisions in there about what it's funding is going to be really important. And to also see above or maybe to or just beyond the horizon line of when that money ends and start to think about it. I think it was one of the things we flagged. I think I flagged it last year at this time, was we will need to understand what the plan is for when the funding starts to dry out, or from the federal government. Again, it was a substantial amount. Someone's going to remind me, I want to say $11 million that we received. So again, those are kind of the high level thoughts that are on my mind around this. And again, I don't want those comments to be taken as criticisms or wherever you are. Just certainly they're foundational, at least for me, in terms of, again, this has to be one of our values, is having a sustainable entity and budget. And again, some of the extraordinary budgeting things we've done, we agreed, and I agreed to increasing wages, but that has long-term effects. And we just need to make sure when we're getting our budget built for this year, we need to keep immediately pivot to long-term sustainability. But I do like the start this has. I do appreciate the work that you're starting to lay out. And I just want to make sure we have markers on those longer-term plans. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Either Autumn or Leo, do you want to make any response to Chris's points?
I would love to chime in quickly, and it looks like Leo would as well. I'll take the prerogative and start. And just on the long-term funding side, and also thinking about our CARES Act as well as our carry forward budget. So there's a couple things that you're going to see in the full draft budget. We do continue to have CARES Act funding that we're eligible to apply for. It's not all in the bank, but it's out there and we can apply for it. We also have some restricted reserves. So this is money that grants that have come in, and money that's set aside for particular projects that have not been spent yet. As well, we have an unrestricted assets. These are funds that are sitting in our bank account that don't have any specific obligations identified associated with them. In our conversations with the TAC, we've heard from various members, Terry told us he was saving up this money for this or for this thing. And so there is a long list of capital projects, planning needs, other, you know, bus purchases, things of that nature that is not well documented currently. We don't have a capital improvement plan. Whatever capital improvement plan we had was kind of, I think, in Terry's head. And so that's why you'll see one of the things that I've identified that we need to do as soon as possible is a capital improvement plan that articulates what those priorities are in terms of kind of one-time improvements, and then understand how the CARES Act funding and some of the carry forward funding that we have, the unrestricted cash, can be used to fill those so that we really have a sense of, you know, how do we make sure that we really are taking the advantage of the opportunity that we have right now with the CARES funding and some of the carry forward to make sure we're putting that to the highest and best use. Right now, because we don't have a capital improvement plan, you'll see when the next version of the budget, we're trying to make sure that we go through a really thorough and thoughtful process to develop that capital improvement plan. But we don't have all the answers right now with regard to that multi-year budget, again, in part because we're still sort of sifting through the pieces and understanding all of the different obligations and commitments we had made to various member jurisdictions around different pieces and wanting to make sure we have the full picture of that before we commit any of those funds.
Okay, very good. Other questions or comments from any member of the board before we turn to public comment?
I just wanted to make a comment about microtransit. I want to preface it by, I think I have to try to be in Terry's head on this for just a second. When I think about microtransit and the paratransit being lumped together, I think it comes from an idea that there's bus transportation and other, and those two things are kind of lumped together as other. And maybe that is a very early iteration of the concepts of microtransit. But where we have grown and where we are growing into is having that whole inner city system in Woodland, which is very different from the microtransit in Winters and Knights Landing, where we're an isolated community that has to get, you know, we have to get people within the community to other communities. And I think that there will be budget changes as far as like maybe the way the drivers will be paid in the system in Woodland versus the, and I'm not sure about that. We haven't had that conversation, but, and then the drivers that are driving the buses, the Your Ride in Winters, to and from Winters to Davis to Woodland and what have you, and Vacaville. I think that it would behoove us to have a concept of how to look at the data in a value set. Because if we're just looking at how much it costs for a driver and how much it costs per trip, that's not really the value of microtransit. So I'm hoping that as we look at it, the iterations of microtransit that we're growing into and the population that it serves, that we have a way to look at that data differently than we used to as just the category of other. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Interesting thought. I'll share some related stories with you later. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Very good. Are there any members of the public who would like to address us on this topic? Looks like we have one person.
We have Mr. Ferrillo who would like to make a public comment.
Okay. And Mr. Ferrillo, I think 3 minutes would be our time frame if that works for you.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Andy. Welcome.
Thank you. So I'm Andy Ferrillo. I'm a member of the Citizens Advisory Committee, and I know I figure we'll be discussing this budget at our meeting next month, but wanted to weigh in, but wanted to get ahead of a couple of things and weigh in a little bit today. So, first of all, I'm of course thrilled to see that. I'm thrilled to see that things are looking good on finally getting that 42 service increase into effect, as well as the increasing the span in West Sacramento sounds great as well. However, I am a little bit more concerned about the plan for Woodland and specifically eliminating the two existing fixed routes once microtransit comes into effect. I know this is different than what was proposed in the YOLOGO plan that kind of streamlines the existing local fixed routes in addition to adding the microtransit. I was thinking about this because I was up in Woodland just this last weekend and I rode the 212. And I mean, there are people riding those buses and there are people using those buses to be able to carry out basic life needs, like going to the grocery and whatnot. And especially after, we've had such a topsy-turvy 2 years with the pandemic and just with all the different changes to transit service and the hope of having the 42 increase happen last year, then having that pulled out from under us with the driver shortage. But after all of this, just as we're kind of coming out of the pandemic, to take away that fixed route service from people would be quite harsh in my view. And it's something that, not just people in Woodland, people from all over the county. Those services are vital to getting people to play to different county services and the shopping centers, like with Costco and whatnot, Best Buy for like workers and shoppers, as well as, community college, the high schools, so many places where bus service is an important means of getting people to and from there. And in addition to that, I'm concerned that taking out those fixed routes would really prevent microtransit from succeeding. I think we've seen in Sacramento and in West Sac, like how microtransit can really effectively complement a fixed route system. But the evidence that it can actually replace a fixed route system, I think, is much more scant. And I feel like just in terms of making sure we have enough, in terms of the agency's priorities, there's much less certain demand for like the 9 to 5 for the express service to set up more around the 9 to 5 commute. I know that's something like traditionally before the pandemic was an important aspect of YCTD's service. But going forward, I think we've seen during the pandemic just the importance of meeting these essential community needs like the local fixed route services in Woodland do. So I'd appreciate if you could consider sustaining those. Yeah, if you could.
Thank you. The timer has erupted. Sorry about that. I think you were you wrapping up, Andy? I think you were.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just had like... I was just going to ask you to consider sustaining those services and doing a more limited return of the express services instead, and really appreciate the chance to comment tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to have you here. And you'll have a chance, of course, to talk with the CAC as well. All right. Very good. Any other members of the public want to address us?
There are no public further comments from the public.
Very good. Thank you. And so this one does not take action. This was a sort of a preview and a revelation of the building blocks that Autumn and Leo and the team are working through. So I think you have what you need from us, Autumn, on this topic.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. So that brings us to item 7. Which is, again, Autumn, prioritizing community service requests.
Yeah, so for this item, this is something that we have in our contract with TransDev. It's a community relations program, which includes a number of elements that allow us to provide services for community events, as well as special services to move people around on a free basis. And our contract says that TransDev will provide 150 hours and up to 3,000 miles of vehicle use time each year at no additional expense. So this is something that's built into our contract. We are paying for it. And anecdotally, the community service program we've understood has not been fully utilized even before COVID. And obviously there's been not a lot of community service happening over the last few years. We are now starting to get requests for various community service events and want to accommodate them. Anecdotally, we've been told that there were certain kinds of requests we could and could not accommodate. We weren't actually able to find a policy that documented this. So we wanted to come back to the board with a set of kind of evaluation factors or criteria that we think makes sense, and make sure that we're getting direction from you, so that we're able to, most both flexibly but also responsibly respond to service requests. So in your packet, we've put together a list of evaluation factors, first for charter events, charter or special service requests, as well as for just participation in community events like parades and festivals, that sort of thing. I think really it's the charter and special service requests are the ones that are, you know, potentially the most kind of time and budget consuming. And so the evaluation factors we've identified or suggested are, you know, would the service advance our vision, values, and priorities? Does it benefit a disadvantaged community or demographic group within Yolo County? Are we uniquely positioned to provide that service, or are there other reasonable options available? There are federal laws around charters. We're not allowed to do charters because we would be competing with like the Greyhounds and Peter Pans of the world. So we have to make sure that any service we give would not conflict with federal charter requirements. And for the most part, we interpret that to mean that we just can't ask for money to do it. If it's free, then it's not a charter. How large a share of our community service budget would it consume? In other words, we don't want to give one entity, you know, the lion's share of our budget. We want to make sure we're spreading it around. And then, of course, are drivers and vehicles available at the times requested? So, you know, obviously drivers and vehicles are limited, particularly drivers these days. And so, it's very difficult for us to respond to requests, say, in the peak periods in the morning and afternoon during the weekdays. But many of these requests do come for the weekend. And, you know, those are times when we have plenty of drivers and vehicles available. So those are the criteria that we've suggested, and we'd love to hear your feedback on those. And then for community events, parades, festivals, et cetera, again, I think these requests are a little bit easier. Generally speaking, they're just looking for us to table, and either our interns or staff can usually participate in those. But occasionally they do want to have a vehicle there. For example, we've been asked to bring a vehicle to an event later this month, where they want to show people how to load, give a demo for how to people to load their bikes onto the bike racks on the front of our buses. And so we are going to be bringing a vehicle to that and having a driver there stationed there who's able to show people how to get their bikes on and off the bus. So occasionally we do have one of these events where they actually does require us to move a vehicle. But so again, the criteria we're looking at there, does it advance our vision, values, and priorities? Does it offer opportunities to attract new transit riders or support the needs of existing transit riders? Does it coincide with opportunities to solicit community input on upcoming projects, plans, or programs? If we're tabling, it's a great opportunity to hear from the public about our priorities. And does the event support our member jurisdictions in advancing their transportation or community priorities? So, I'll stop there and would love to hear any kind of thoughts that you may have on utilization and how we respond to these requests. Mostly, I want to make sure we use our budget and that we're getting the word out and that we're able to, you know, we're paying for it. So we should get out there and make sure those services are available to people.
In this fiscal year, how much have you been able to use this?
You know, and looking back in the documentation, because TransDev is part of their reports to us, they do provide, there is a worksheet that says how many community hours and events. And so far, to my knowledge, I haven't seen any in this fiscal year. So we have pretty much our entire outstanding budget left at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Autumn. Are there questions from members of the board, comments on the factors that are identified as considerations for this community service events? Jesse, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just wondering, do you have to meet a minimum or maximum amount? Would you have to meet like maybe four of the criteria or three of the criteria to be considered, or one? I was just wondering how to look at the list.
That's a great question. I hadn't really kind of put that much structure around it. Again, we were kind of looking to this as factors that we should prioritize, but not necessarily that we would like score applications or anything quite that structured. But if that is the board's preference, we can certainly propose something along those lines.
Not knowing about this in the past, had I known, I think I would have suggested in winters when they have bike rodeo and they teach the, you know, kids how to do the bikes, there would be a bus there for them to also learn how to load a bike, you know. Just knowing this, I think, is beneficial to my city. So thank you for adding this to the agenda. And I don't know that I would need to have three of the boxes checked or four. I think that might be too formal too fast.
Yeah. Good points. Any other questions or comments?
Just a real quick one. Yeah, thanks for Autumn for bringing this to the board. I think this is one of those things that we, a service that is here that we need to make available to the communities we serve. So I'd agree with my colleague, board member Lauren, about sort of, I'm not going to be as prescriptive and say there should be a box check, but I would say that there should be some monitoring and reporting out to the board sort of as these things come up, and sort of an aggregation at the end of the year, a year end report on how it was used. And I think that the benefit there, or I think it's just to make sure we are using it and where it got used, so we can help monitor that and, you know, find the right opportunities. So that's all.
Great suggestion. Yeah.
Good points. Anybody else? Okay. Is there any, Jesse?
I forgot one. How would I make a request? The wheels are already turning. Is there a process to make a request?
Yeah, the process is just to email us, you know, with the request. Yep. Or to have whoever wants to make the request just get in touch with me. Yeah. Or anyone on staff.
This is terribly bureaucratic. I don't know if we're going to be able to manage.
I can come up with a form.
Please, no. Okay. Very good. Very good. Are there any members of the public who'd like to address us on this topic?
There are no public comments.
Okay. So this, you're asking for feedback and you received it. So I think we've concluded this topic and we'll move on to item 8 unless anyone has anything further on this one. Okay. Item 8 is the what we've all been waiting for, the audited financial statements and compliance reports and governance letter for last fiscal year ending June 30, 2021.
I can perhaps start by introducing
Brian Nash.
This is Leo Levinson.
Oh, Leo, sorry.
I was just going to introduce Brian from our auditors. Still, Chair Saylor, still acting as RGS on behalf of the district. I'm very pleased that we have the auditors here to present our audited financial statements. Mm-hmm. And the staff report mentioned just a couple of highlights, which I'll mention before turning it over to Brian, just to try and point out what are the numbers that are most interesting in these reports. We're really grateful to have the work of these auditors to make sure that we can present our financial condition clearly and have an independent view to make sure that we're doing it accurately. And what this showed, if you look at the sort of total net position of the district, it showed that it decreased by $1.5 million. This is as of June 30th, 2021, which is the end of the year that we're reporting on. But really most of that decrease is due to depreciation of our existing equipment because we didn't buy a bunch of new buses in this particular year. And so all of our existing equipment was depreciating during that year. So the unrestricted net position, which looks at really what's available to the district to use at the current level, increased by $1.1 million to $9.7 million. And we had about $6.4 million of cash on hand. Also a good number to look at to know we're not in trouble for making payroll. We do have some cash on hand as of June 30th, 2021, with a further nearly 6 million receivables, mostly a lot of that federal and state grant funds we were eligible for at the end of the year. And so the budget assumed, our 21-22 budget did, people have talked about how we balanced this year's budget, was actually not using CARES Act this year, but using some of the money that it built up from prior years. And so there was an assumption of $2.6 million of that funds being used in the current year. And then we also just recently, the board approved the use of $4 million, $4.1 million, to go into our general reserve. And this is all to say what would be left if we had no more savings this year, just looking at what was budgeted to use of this unrestricted fund balance. It would leave about $3 million in unrestricted funds available to use in future budget years. On top of that will be if we have an operating surplus this year, which we still, I believe that we will have. It depends a little on the federal grant funds and so on that we're planning to draw down. But the way it looks is that we'll probably add to that $3 million by the time we get to year end. And we'll have another update at the next board meeting in May as to the current year status, as to whether we expect that to add to our funds available for next year's budget. So the rest of the notes in the staff report were primarily around the single audit, which is the work that our auditors do to confirm that we've spent and reported our federal funds accurately and compliantly. And as mentioned here, there was one finding which had to do with the accuracy of our reporting as to federal spending. It did not have to do with any of the other compliance. It was really on the accuracy of the reporting. And we have concurred with the auditor's recommendations related to this and are taking steps to respond to it so that it does not get repeated in the next year. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Brian Nash from our auditors to add his remarks.
Thank you, Leo. And I just wanted to start by saying I was happy to hear that Leo will be staying on for two more years. He really did a lot of digging into numbers and comparing different reports, the audited financial statements with the other federal filing, the FTA report and the state controller's report, the other regulatory filings. Excuse me. And we addressed many inconsistencies, things that questions that came up. So he really did dig in and he learned a lot. He's really passed that learning curve that does come up when you come to someplace new. There were many, I think, many good positive things that came about due to him digging into the numbers. So I was very pleased to hear he's going to stay on for another 2 years. I think that's going to be very beneficial. Just to kind of give you some of the things that we worked with this year, the audit, when you hear that management has changed over just before the audit begins, the worst case scenario could be a very, very bad audit, but it really wasn't. We had very few adjustments, a couple of reclassifications, some things that were just due to digging into numbers and trying to understand them. We also helped review and provide feedback on policies and procedures this year. So we spent a little more time on that. We did disclose the micro transit services. That's a positive result, I think, of Leo digging into the numbers and the financial statements. I think that's a positive thing. There's a few other things, moving numbers around, reconciling between the two reports, the different reports that are filed. So I think it's a really good thing that he's staying on and he's passed that learning curve and is really going to be able to understand and be able to handle going forward much, much easier for himself. I mean, he spent a lot of time digging into everything. I just wanted to put a thought on the unrestricted net position. That's really the number that I look at. That's the number that's spendable net position. It went from about 7.5 months of operating expenses. That's your total operating expenses less depreciation in 2020 to about 9 months in 2021. So, at the beginning of 2021, if somebody would have said that's where we're going to be, I think everybody wouldn't have believed it. So very good result. There's a lot of agencies out there that have a hard time coming up with 6 months of reserves. And it's very important for transit agencies to have a little bit of net position because it takes a long time to collect those grants that are available, that are a big part of their revenue source. So that was positive. The fair revenue ratio, The district did meet its fair revenue ratio. There's a minimum ratio of 15%, and we ended up at 21.73%. That was down a little bit, which is understandable considering the fares went down, but it's still not too bad. That's quite a good cushion considering what happened during that past year. There are some changes. The AB 149, Assembly Bill 149, was passed in July of 2021. And there are some COVID-19 extensions of some of the exceptions that existed into some of the rules. So if there's a shortfall through 2023, now fiscal year 2023, there's no more penalty on the assessed on the fair revenue for being short. So the district hasn't been short, but now there's AB 149 says through 2023, there's nothing to worry about. There's also some changes that allow some other revenue sources to be included in the fair revenue ratio. Federal revenue, I'm not exactly sure what they mean. I need to dig into this a little bit more. But federal revenue is able to be included in the fair revenue ratio as local funds. It's been interesting. So we tried to explore that with Josh Pulverman at Caltrans, and we weren't able to get connected with him to be able to understand what that meant. But that's a positive things for the fair revenue ratio. Just to put my thought on the single audit issue, there's a schedule of expenditures of federal awards. It's the expenses that exist under the federal awards. That was the issue. Those numbers didn't agree to the revenue that was recognized in the financial statements. So it's really just kind of a reconciliation issue. Nothing too serious. There's no management letter this year. A management letter would be a letter of recommendations. We had one recommendation in the prior year related to the purchasing policy, referencing the new federal guidelines, but that's been taken care of from what I understand. So we removed that comment. So just really a good result for the audit, very positive results for the audit, considering what could have happened with all the turnover. And that's really due to Leo and Autumn really making sure everything was done appropriately. So we definitely appreciated all the hard work. So thank you, Leo. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions related to the audit.
Okay. Thank you both. Are there questions of our auditor and our financial director? I don't see any. This is for to receive and file. Very much appreciate the presentation and especially the overall positive reading. Let's make sure if anybody in the public would like to address us, they have that opportunity. Is there anybody who would like to address us on the topic that we just heard?
There are no public comments.
All right. Thank you, everyone. I think we've concluded our agenda. Autumn, is there anything further for the good of the cause?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. This will next time we'll be seeing each other in the same room, and we'll miss your virtual backgrounds and Tom's bookcase and Jesse's bus. good to see you all next month. So we're hereby adjourn this.
Do we have to come fully clothed?
That's your own choice. I won't. we'll let you make your own judgment. You will be judged, of course, by it. Let's bye bye. We're adjourned.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See you soon.
Bye.